Part of me wonders who will buy the DJ Graham interception t-shirt from Oklahoma and his one-handed grab the other day. I think you're it's a pretty slick shirt. You can also get it on a hoodie.
Yeah, I think if I'm an OU fan, I'd buy this shirt. I don't know about the hoodie, but it's a cool shirt.
But here's the thing. It's on a website of the company that designed it for him. Wouldn't it make sense, like, if you're DJ Graham, maybe like family members, to get that t-shirt and be outside of the stadium trying to sell it this weekend? I have not seen, you know, there's a couple of Nebraska football players that have their own clothing line or, you know, a hat, you know. Why wouldn't they, like a family member, be outside of the stadium selling? Like, you get a little bit further away from the stadium. There used to be, and maybe the police moved them out, when you were walking down 10th Street towards the stadium, there was always a guy selling t-shirts. He had his wingspan, he would have four or five t-shirts. Is there anything that prohibits like a family member outselling Cam Jurgens gear?
I would think that you just have to get the permit from the city, right?
By a vendor? What?
Yeah. But that's a good idea.
You know, because where are most people, you know, I got to go, what, to the website? But if you're right, you know, the people that are going to the game, buy a Cam Jurgens hat or a t-shirt.
Come on, Dad, buy me a shirt. So it's right there.
DJ Graham should have like mom and dad outside the stadium selling that t-shirt for $30. Let me give you a little nugget and then we'll get back to the calls here. So I ran across this. This is jaw-dropping. Maybe this is a buyer beware, but in some of these guys' cases, they were home run hires. What do these coaches, formerly of the American Athletic Conference, have in common? Scott Frost, Tom Herman, Chad Morris, Justin Fuente, Mike Norvell, Willie Taggart, Jeff Collins. They all coached at some point in the AAC. They all were successful in the AAC. They used their success to bump up to Power 5. Frost and Herman, no-brainers for Nebraska and Texas, respectively. Mike Norvell, I think Florida State people thought, oh, we made it through Willie. Mike Norvell is going to be okay. Mike Norvell might be out of job. Florida State may not, when they win one more game, I mean, there's some issues there. Scott Frost, Tom Herman, Chad Morris, Justin Fuente, Mike Norvell, Willie Taggart, Jeff Collins. They weren't all in the AAC at the same time, but they were close to each other being in the AAC. All got a bump up. None of them have broken through. But in that conference, they were like legends, and they were really, really good, but haven't been able to replicate that success at the Power 5 level. All right, back to the phones we go to kick off this last hour that'll include Parker Gabriel. Here is Jesse. Jesse, thanks for holding. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Gary, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm going to sidetrack a little bit, and you mentioned the buyer Notre Dame people calling me. Admittedly, Notre Dame fan, realistic Notre Dame fan. I get the love and the hate and all that. Question kind of around Oklahoma as well. As far as Notre Dame goes, let's start with, like, on field, over the last 5 years, let's call it. Forget mm-hmm. the history of the program's prestige. Over the last 5 years, it's pretty tough to argue that Notre Dame and Oklahoma both among the top six programs in the country.
Yes.
I would say. Okay, so, and that's just based on actual on-field performance. So do you think, given how Notre Dame was perceived in the polls 25 years ago, there's no Notre Dame bias, they shouldn't start the year that high or whatever. Do you think as there's been turnover in the voters and in the media, that has shifted to now where instead of there being this Notre Dame bias, that maybe there's less wiggle room for Notre Dame in terms of how they perform and then how they subsequently appear in the polls?
I think they still get the benefit of the doubt. As long as Brian Kelly is there, you're going to assume that he's going to have at least a top 15 program. I think this year, their high ranking to begin is off of last year's college football playoff and the belief that Notre Dame would have no problem replacing Ian Book, which is, I mean, he's difficult to replace. And they also lost their defensive coordinator in Clark Lee, who went to Vanderbilt. It kind of almost seems like they overlooked those two things, but then said, oh, here's Marcus Freeman, who was a rising offseason home run hire from Cincinnati. He's going to fix everything. So Notre Dame's going to be fine. So let's just kind of leave them where they were last year inside of the top 10.
Right. And so going back to wins and losses and then bringing Oklahoma back into the mix, right? So Notre Dame's 3-0. Oklahoma's 3-0. Notre Dame has two, let's call it Power 5 wins and one MAC win. Oklahoma has one Power 5 win, one Group of 5 win, and one FCS win. I've seen Notre Dame, and no real impressive wins on Oklahoma's part outside the FCS win. I saw Notre Dame drop in the polls because of, I guess, a lack of sexiness in their wins, so to speak. Are you seeing that, or what do you think of that? That versus Oklahoma not dropping the same way.
I was surprised that Oklahoma didn't fall further. To be honest with you, Jesse.
Okay.
I thought they would.
I want to make sure I'm not crazy here.
No, I was surprised that Oklahoma did not fall a little bit further, because here's also what happens with these people that vote in the AP poll. They will also pay attention to the point spread. Okay. So Oklahoma is supposed to win by 3 touchdowns. They only won by 7. It didn't seem like they got penalized for a close win, unless people think Nebraska is a really, really good football team, which I don't get that impression from people that are voting in these polls. So is Oklahoma not falling further than they did really surprised me. And it actually benefits Oklahoma, because now their season begins, they're going to be in the Big 12, and they're going to hammer a lot of people, and they're going to be right there sitting in a good spot in terms of the rankings to make their way into the playoff if they remain unbeaten and teams in front of them fall.
Cool. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Jesse, thanks for the phone call. The thing with Notre Dame this weekend is you know this, Mike, you're a diehard Notre Dame fan. It's a middling offense. Defense still, I like Marcus Freeman, but they have not been able to be the same takeaway-driven unit that they were in Cincinnati. They're not taking the football away. So they beat a dreadful Florida State team. At the time, we all thought when we woke up on Labor Day that that was a good win. Little did we know, Florida State has issues with offensive line, quarterback, and the wide receivers can't get any separation. And it just kind of, Notre Dame fell asleep at the wheel, and Florida State got back into the game. Next thing you know, it goes into overtime. It's an exciting game. Then the alarming one to me was the last gasp drive against Toledo.
Yes.
But here's the beauty of Notre Dame's schedule. You're going to find out everything you need to know about Notre Dame, probably starting this weekend, because I don't want to put words in your mouth as a Notre Dame guy. I don't think they've shown you enough to make you a believer that it's going to be fine, because they play Wisconsin this weekend, and then you have unbeaten Cincinnati, then you have Virginia Tech, then you go, USC and North Carolina over the next 6 weeks.
Yeah. Last week, I felt, after watching last week's game, I felt a little more confidence in their defense. You get Kyle Hamilton. He's a mistake eraser. But it's tough, man. I don't have the confidence. I know last week you guys were asking me, it was a 7-point spread, right, for the game?
Mm-hmm.
You guys were asking me, and I wasn't confident that they would hit that spread.
But so I should have asked Jesse as well, if Notre Dame beats Wisconsin this weekend, then how do you look at Notre Dame?
I think it depends on if they come out in all four quarters, it's not, I won't say dominate them, but it's Notre Dame's a better team. Notre Dame's winning the game. I'll be happy with that.
Because we don't know about Wisconsin. They played two
exactly.
games. They had last week off. They struggled offensively against Penn State, but defensively they were okay. Then they played an inferior opponent, Eastern Michigan, and they ran it down their throats, and they looked like the Wisconsin of old. But that's the beauty of college football, is the schedule plays out and you learn everything you need to know, because Wisconsin plays Notre Dame this weekend, and then they play Michigan. What do we know about Michigan?
Not much.
I mean, honestly, it's only 3 weeks into the season. How much do we know? What team do we know the most about? May add to a question I brought up at the beginning of the week, is there a great team in college football?
Yeah, after this week, what Florida did to Bama? I mean, a lot of question marks, right?
We love the Clemson defense, hate the Clemson offense.
Awful.
Love the Georgia defense, love the Georgia offense. I mean, Georgia might be the only one, but Alabama's number one until you knock them off, and they might be the only team that's right there in that tier, where that second tier is Georgia, Oregon. I would throw Iowa and Penn State in there.
Yeah.
And then after that, maybe Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Arkansas, Texas A&M together, but one of those teams is going to get eliminated, because Texas A&M and Arkansas play this weekend.
I think Arkansas wins.
And then there's BYU. This may be a year, again, a chaotic year, but there's no just like, wow, teams.
There are no 2019 LSUs.
But we've only played 3 weeks of the season. and we want to fast forward to the first rankings that come out in
late October. They shouldn't put the rankings out until week five.
Well, this is what I look at. If you're watching a team play on Saturday, just your eyeballs, you don't know what the ranking is, don't know what the record is. Use Nebraska, Oklahoma. You watch the game. Now you know the score. What do you think both of those teams are ranked?
Would you
think Nebraska is a top 25 team?
After watching that game, yeah.
And you would think Oklahoma should be...
15?
Two teams that are, you know, from 16 on up. It's the old eyeball test. But it's all about where you begin. If you are like Notre Dame or like Oklahoma, and you haven't played anywhere near maybe how you think you're going to play, but you haven't been severely hurt. Now, Notre Dame has, you know, dropped down to 12. It's where you start. If you got a good starting position, you just kind of hang around. Just hang around a little bit longer.
And then you beat teams that they don't deserve that ranking, and it boosts your ranking. I hate it. I don't think they should put any rankings out until week five.
I mean, where should it, you know, is Clemson number 9? That seems about right.
Right now, yeah.
But they shouldn't be nowhere near the top 4 or top 5, even though they had a one-score game against Georgia. Here is Kirk. Hello, Kirk.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
I'll start. I say bring on the chaos. Going back to what you were saying about college football, make it like March Madness. It's way more fun. So chaos is great. Hey, I have a question for you. You know, I think Adrian has played above expectations for the average Husker fan with very little help. His O-line hasn't done much for him, and his running backs haven't done much for him because of the O-line. Do you think he benefits from not having the typical go-to wide receiver like Spielman or Wandell, and he has to truly scan? I feel like he's scanning the field way better than he has in the past. I just wonder if not having that true go-to makes a difference.
I think, Kirk, and that's I like your observation. I think it's just he has a couple of more guys that he trusts. So he's going to check them out instead of locking into one guy. So when Nebraska runs a passing play and guys are out running their routes, you could make the case that there are two or three guys that are viable options, where maybe in the last 2 years there's been one and a half guys that have been available to him. So that's allowed him, if that guy's not open, number two could be open, or I got to go to number three, and there's a chance that in those three I'm going to find one person open.
Well, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I also think teams, everybody wants a good pass rush, but I think it benefits Adrian because he is way better on the move and he gets his head upfield more. Whereas if he was a true drop back sitting in the pocket, I think he struggles more in that traditional sense than when he's forced to have to kind of, you know, move around.
Yeah, I think if he was a straight drop back, that old school, he would probably be on the injured list after the first 4 weeks. Yeah. But you're right, with his legs, and that's, I'd be curious, you know, how Oklahoma approached him. And he was able, you know, the thing that Adrian has also done, not only with his physique and being trimmed down, you can tell he's more mature. He's not as careless with the football. He keeps his eyes up. He doesn't get super impatient. But when he has to get out of the pocket and run, he's making teams miss tackles. You know, he is eluding them or he is breaking through tackles. What does Michigan State do? Do they look at what Oklahoma did and said, okay, we got to contain number two and let somebody else beat us? Or what do they say? We'll take everyone away and let Adrian beat us. Because here's a comparison at Kirk to something to watch, I think, Saturday night, is they faced De'Eriq King last week. And King throws the ball better than Martinez, but they just crushed King. They didn't let him get outside of the pocket. They didn't let him run, and they came after him. They let him complete stuff underneath, little pitch and catch stuff, and then they tackled, even if it was after 10, 12 yards. I don't know what Mel Tucker will do. I think it might be the same philosophy against Martinez. But if he plays that way like he did against Oklahoma, I think Nebraska's got a really, really good chance. But they've got to be able to run the football. And I think it's going to be tougher to run the football against Michigan State than it was Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I would all, you know, I know I got to get off the phone and let you go, but I'd almost put Michigan State as one of those teams is you kind of know what you're going to get with these guys. I've been incredibly impressed with what they've done in their first three games. And I think you're going to kind of see that throughout the season.
Yep. Kirk, thanks for the phone call. It's A good start for Michigan State. We play this game. Well, we know Northwestern's not very good. How good is Miami? Well, I think Michigan State is a solid football team. They're well coached. They don't hurt themselves. They don't turn the ball over on offense. They got a quarterback in Thorne who has not thrown a pick yet. He's smart with the football. And then it helps to have a guy like Kenneth Walker. When you have a guy that is running for almost 9 yards per carry, and he's running people over and he's running through people, it helps immensely. They've got a good game plan. This is going to be a contest. Eric Chenander is going to have a good Saturday night in the booth. He's going to have to be able to scheme. One, he can't do anything about missed tackles. Guys are going to have to wrap up. But Jay Johnson, who Mel Tucker brought from Colorado as his offensive coordinator, they put their players in a position to succeed. They don't make Peyton Thorne all of a sudden be something he's not supposed to be. And he's also smart. Throws the football away. Doesn't throw it into harm's way, at least through the first 3 weeks. But how they utilize their kind of H-back, tight end, fullback, how they utilize that, that's something that Nebraska doesn't see a lot of. How does Nebraska deal with that? You know, who's going to have the most important night for Nebraska? I don't think it's the defensive line. I think defensive line has played well. They got to play much better. There's still some things that ail them. It's going to be on the Domans and the Reimers of the world for Nebraska on defense, on what they do with whether Walker's coming right at him or bouncing to the outside. They like to run the stretch play with him. Or what they do with these little short passes to a guy like Hayward. You're going to hear Connor Hayward's name a lot. He's an ideal role. He looks like a fullback. He'll go and play H-back, and sometimes he'll be on line of scrimmage as a tight end. But this is a good matchup. I think these are two coaching staffs that Nebraska, again, I reiterate, I was impressed by the game plan Saturday against Oklahoma and the commitment to it. I thought that was one of the better called games. It was not anywhere near perfect. There were glitches. There was disorganization. But in terms of the schematics on offense and defense, I thought it was the right approach, and it was the right approach to stay with it during the game. And it wasn't like Oklahoma never changed. You know, Oklahoma made some subtle changes, and you saw that, especially in the second half. I think Michigan State will be the same way. But that's when you have a little margin of error, you've got to win the coaching battles. You got to win the Saturday coaching battles. And the defense, Nebraska's defense against Michigan State's offense will be one to watch. And eventually, I believe that's where it'll be won. Kenneth Walker is running down the field all over the place like he was against Miami. And those little 5-6 yard runs become bigger ones as you get to the fourth quarter. Miami was outscored 21-3 in the fourth quarter. But yet Nebraska, if you look at the numbers, Nebraska's been pretty good in the fourth quarter this year. I like this matchup. This is a good Big Ten matchup between two teams that I believe aren't that far apart. And it comes down to execution. Michigan State has played 3 games. They've executed very well. Nebraska's played 4 games. And the 2 games that they haven't won, they didn't execute very well. Football's simple. We try and make it hard. Football's simple. 120. Parker Gabriel will join us here in about 15 minutes on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.